también va a estar la Ava de Gode, Ava de Gode. So, those who are supposed to go to other meeting, one of members, you can just go, because that one is also very important, as this one is important. It is our first meeting as the Select Committee on Security and Justice, which is including National Defense Force and military veterans. You are most welcome at the beginning of the fifth Democratic Parliament. We as public representatives, we are given a mandate by the people to make sure that the service delivery is happening on the ground. And also I know you have a lot of, you have a lot in your bags that we have to defend and protect this country. I know it's not an easy job, but I think working together, we can achieve, we can take South Africa forward. So by these words, by those words, I want to welcome you, requesting you as officials and us as representatives, or they call us politicians, but we are here in this house for South Africa, all of us. I appeal to you, let's work together, make us understand things that we don't understand, and we'll try by all means as politicians, because we're not professionals. You are professionals. You know your story. But we'll try to listen to you and ask questions whereby we don't understand things. For those of you with one of the members and delegation from our National Defense Force, you are most welcome. I think, first of all, let me give you to introduce your team, as we are going to do exactly what it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Select Committee. We would first like to apologize for the Minister and the Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, as they were not able to join us due to other meetings, as you have indicated, that are taking place, not just parliamentary meetings, but also certain cabinet committee meetings that are all taking place at the same time. But we were honored then to have been requested to come and represent the department at this presentation. My name is Sam Gulube. I'm the Secretary for Defense, Honorable Chair, Member, and Members. We have two teams. As you know, we have one Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans, but we have two departments, Department of Defense and Department of Military Veterans. I will be leading the presentation on the Department of Defense, after which we'll propose that we can discuss the presentation and questions. Then I will move away from the seat and then bring in the Department of Military Veterans. I think they will then introduce themselves at that time once our part of it is complete. I will then ask the team from the Department of Defense to introduce themselves, starting with next on my right here,
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I am Major General Kurani Michael Ramantswana, Chief Military Policy, Strategy and Planning. Thank you, sir.
My name is Preeti Ram Singh from the Directorate of Strategy and Planning. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. I'm Major General Mushi, Chief Director of Policies and Strategy, representing CG Ops. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, I'm Brigadier General Peter Silwani, Director HR Strategy and Planning for the Department of Defense. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. I'm Louis Knockle. I'm the Director of Budget Control responsible for finances.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable members. I'm Rear Admiral Junigrade Kesavel Naidu, the Director of Maritime Plans.
Over to you from Military Veterans.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I am Vernon Jacobs. I am an Acting Deputy Director General at the Department of Military Veterans.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Moses Rampele in the Strategic Support Directorate, Chief Directorate.
Once again, I'm Bulelo Mwisi, I'm Chief Director Communications, Department of Military Veterans.
Morning, Honorable Members and Colleagues. I'm Nandi Panzaluba from Department of Military Veterans, responsible for Chief Director Strategic Support, wherein you have IT, strategy, and legal. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Members and the Chair. I'm Smakale Mwasuri, the Director in the Office of the GG Instruction.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Lydia Meso. I'm the Director for Internal Audit and Risk Management.
Morning, Honorable Members. I'm Leverang Tindisa from Directorate Finance, Cost and Management Accounting. Thank you.
My name is Dumiswane Kimbi, the member of the Select Committee on Security and Justice. I'm a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. Originally, I'm from Eastern Cape, Umtata, Stokely Bode. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everyone. Good afternoon. Good morning. Hey. Oh, good morning. Nandi Mthabiso, Baba Wana, the commander, the permanent delegate from that province of the legends. It is okay. The mushroom, so pitching along fully and then the match away.
Thank you. morning, Jean Julius Gauteng.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Michalakis. I'm a permanent delegate from the Free State.
Good morning to the Chairperson, Generals, and Directors of the Army and members of the DMB. My name is Moses Mhlanga, originally from Mpumalanga, popular known as Kwaito.
Good morning, thank you, Chair. I'm from the Background Enterprise of the Commission.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Reddy Ntatele Lokhuma. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer to the Minister of Defence and Military Affairs.
Good morning. My name is Reginald Marimi, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Secretary for Defence.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Vlalem van Reisberg. I'm the researcher for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Calvin Manglan, researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Defense.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Vuyo Ntlangu from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. I'm Singre Nyakabao from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Raja Azakani. I'm from Parliament Communications.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Stephen Hoffer. I am an observer. I do media relations work for a number of companies with interest in the defense arena.
Thank you very much. I think it's good to know everybody in the house. Thank you very much. I think without wasting time, let's give the defense that to present whatever they have in the hand. Over to the defense force. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. We will be presenting our annual performance plan. This is for the financial year 14-15, which is the current year that we are already running, and also as well as the budget vote. It's a presentation that normally we would have made then in March, April, at the beginning or just before the beginning of this financial year. But because of the program of that included the national elections, we are, it's only now that we are presenting this annual performance plan. And it's really a great pleasure to be presenting for the first time to this new administration and this new committee, and wish everybody everything of the best in this work. We have distributed the presentation itself, so I will not be reading on the presentation. I will be taking the members on the major high level or highlights or areas that I would like to draw the priorities of the members. Yes, maybe since the first presentation, the presentation might appear as if it's more detailed, but since we have distributed it, I will not be going through slide by slide. This is the scope that will be covering first the introduction, and then we'll do some strategic overview, and then we'll also look at the core performance of information, the budget allocations, the audit report of the financial year 12-13, and the action plans that we of that audit report. That sort of helps us looking at the audit report of the general to see the health, as it were, the health status of the department and the challenges that we are facing in terms of accountability and management. I will not be covering the budget review recommendations because this was actually meant for the portfolio committee as they specifically requested us to address the budget review areas that they have raised. So the aim really of the presentation is to present this corporate overview of the Department of Defense, which is both the Defense Secretariat and the South African National Defense Force, and formulated as annual performance plan. As a matter of introduction, we, as the Department of Defense, guided by the various legislative mandate, which includes the Constitution and specific legislation. But the overall aim of the Department of Defense is to provide defense and protection of the Republic. And then we have the Civilian Secretariat, which states that the Constitution says must be established by the national legislation to function under the direction of the cabinet member, which in this case is the minister. Our vision is to ensure that the country there is there's an effective defense for a democratic South Africa, and we do that through our mission, that is to provide, prepare, and employ defense capabilities commensurate with the needs of South Africa as regulated by the Constitution, national legislation, and parliamentary and executive direction. And I will look also at the constitutional and legislative mandate. In the Constitution itself, it is Section 200, Paragraph 2, as well as Section 204, that talks to the establishment of the Department of the Department of Defense. The Section 200 speaks to the President as the head and therefore Commander-in-Chief of the Defense Force, who then appoints the military command of the Defense Force. And the function of the Defense Force is to provide the defense and protection of the Republic, its territorial integrity, and its people. According to Section 204, then, a Civilian Secretariat for Defense must be established by the national legislation to function under the direction of the cabinet member responsible for defense. That national legislation that is referred to in the Constitution is employed as the Defense Act of 2002, as well as the Defense Amendment Act of 2010, which talks to this the Defense Act as a whole talks to the composition of the military command of the Department of Defense, the Secretariat, and also about the powers and assignments and duties of the Secretariat, as well as the establishment of the South African National Defense Force and the establishment of the Reserve Force Council. The amendment of 2010 included the establishment of the Military Command Council, the Reserve Force, and legislation towards the call-up of the Reserve Force, establishment and functions of the Defense Service Commission to look at the conditions of service of the members of the South African National Defense Force, as well as the functions of that commission. Other legislative then that guide the work of the Department of Defense include the Public Service Act, Public Finance Management Act, Military Ombuds, Customs Management Act, Arms Code, as well as the National Conventional Arms Control Act. The others are clear, might be familiar with us, but the National Conventional Arms Control Act is established by this act of it establishes a ministerial committee currently chaired in this administration by Minister and the President, Honorable Hatebe. And then we in the Department of Defense provide the secretariat to that committee. This is a committee that deals with the licenses for the import and export of various weapons systems, as well as responsible for providing that support. I have been informed by the Office of the Chairperson that we will be invited then to talk into detail about the National Conventional Arms Control Act during the process of work of this committee, and we'll be happy to do so. When we look at the micro-organizational design of the department, what I would like to highlight there is that on one side you have the Defense Secretariat, because the Constitution calls for civil oversight of the military, and that civil, the Defense Secretariat then assists the minister in providing that civil oversight of the military. And on the other side then you have the South African National Defense Force, which is headed by the chief of the South African National Defense Force, in this case General Shoghe, who with then various other services. I know it's very easy for us when we refer to the National Defense Force, we just refer it as the Army, whereas the Army really is just one section of the National Defense Force. The National Defense Force is made of the Army, Air Force, Navy, Military Health Services, and so forth. So when the Chief of the Army hears that he's the Chief of the Army, then and everybody refers to him as the Chief of the Army, he thinks that he's the Chief of the South African National Defense Force. No, he's just Chief of the Army. So we would refer to the Defense Force as the National Defense Force with various chiefs of services. And this is all highlighted in this manner. And when it comes to look at the planning requirements, the defense as an organ of state is required by the PFMA and the related national treasury regulations to have these planning instruments. That is the strategic plan, which is a 5-year plan. As the new administration is coming now, we do have a 5-year strategic plan as the Department of Defense, which takes us up to 2019. But what we're presenting today is not that 5-year plan. We're just presenting the annual performance plan, which is part of that 5-year plan. We then have the executive authority, the overarching strategic statement. That overarching strategic statement is really our 5-year strategic framework from 2000. The one of 2016, as I was indicating, 14, 15 is ending now. We're starting a new cycle in that. The overarching strategic statement has two components, the Defense Secretariat part as well as the SANDF part. So you have a Defense Secretariat strategic plan as well as the SANDF strategic plan. And we report this through these plans through various parliamentary committees. As it is right now, we up to now, we even when you read our annual report, the 13-14 annual report, which is I think now being towards the end of July, is in the process of being finalized, you will find that you will have two performance plans and two strategic plans that are being presented. But as of now, this year, the minister has indicated that there should be only one strategic statement and plan of the department. We should not have the Secretariat on one side and the Defense Force on the other side. We should just have one plan. These are the two aspects of the strategic statement that I was saying that we are now combining into one plan. When we look at the planning requirements, as we have indicated in this overarching strategic statement, they have various components, or these plans have various components. We, as we do these plans, we are required by National Treasury to do our plans in a certain format. So I will ask maybe the members to forgive us if you feel like we are repeating ourselves even throughout the presentation. I will try not to repeat, but the slides themselves, they will be repetitive, because this is the format that we are required by the National Treasury to present in. So we need to talk about our plans, how are they related to the national imperatives. In terms of our national imperatives in this case is to defend and protect South Africa and contribute towards the freedom from fear and want of our people and contribute to a better life for all the people of South Africa. That's what we draw from the national imperatives. then we look into departmental imperatives in terms of, that will be informed by the national imperatives to enhance the defense capability, promote security, peace and security, and also the government policy, which is to resolve conflicts peacefully, and the participation in the various multilateral and the bilateral platforms such as SADC, AU, and UN. Based on those requirements, the way we have designed then the 2014 and 2015, as well as on the strategic plans or the strategic plans that we tabled in the beginning of 2011, which was a 5-year plan, that 5-year plan had the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans priorities. During that time, the Minister stated that the priorities will be the execution of the border safeguarding function, because in 2009 the border safeguarding was transferred from the South African Police Service into the South African National Defence Force. So the Minister outlined this as one of the priorities, including the establishment of a new service dispensation, the enhancement of the landward defence capabilities, taking into account that the last acquisition strategic plan emphasized or covered mostly the Air Force as well as the Navy and the Army. The landward defense capabilities were not covered, so the Minister highlighted this as a priority, including the maritime security because of the rising piracy on our oceans, or oceans of continental oceans, the job creation as a government imperative, and the enhancement of the South African National Defense Force peacekeeping capability.
Okay. The presenter is not presenting according to what we are looking at. You will see the drawing, then I'm concentrating. I don't know who is operating this thing.
Okay, sorry. How about he mentioned that?
Yeah, he did, but now then he's presenting. He mustn't do what is happening.
Okay, fine. Okay, and I want to apologize to the members. It means that the documents are still coming. Yeah, they are still coming. Yeah, I'm sure what delay there is. A lot of delays. I don't know what's happening. As a result, the sector is going out to assist. Come again.
Maybe the presenter must control the slides.
Oh, okay.
Because
I get you. Okay.
It's moving faster than them.
Okay. All right. Then we can continue.
Thank you very much. We will definitely do that, and apologies. It's, I think, our fault in terms of the technology that we have in front of us that is not talking to us who are still using hard copies. We will try and get into the technologies. The planning requirements, I think that we're talking about, that it is a requirement from the National Treasury Framework on Strategic and Annual Performance Plan that it has to be outcome-based at all levels. And reflective of this outcome-based requirement within the context of the defense plan and constitutional and legislative mandate, the DoD has drawn what we call a strategic map. That is what we're talking about when we talk about the overarching strategy. And this is a strategic map of the Department of Defense. When you look at it, the colors that are more like Hemcock sand, as they call them, relate to mostly the functions or participation of the National Defense Force. That will be the portfolio or the responsibilities of the National Defense Force. The ones that are green will be then the secretariat. So the outcomes that we are looking at as Department of Defense are two: that first, South Africa is defended and protected, and then the second outcome is that there has to be enhanced civil oversight of defense. I think sometimes they use the term civil control, but I think the more user-friendly term or acceptable term is civil oversight over defense. Now, the outputs, which is really talk to our mandate and what we do in terms of our the execution of the department, on the secretariat side, we provide sound defense direction. I'll make an example. This year, we just concluded the 2014 Defense Review Policy document that was adopted by the cabinet. That will be then us as a secretariat providing that sound defense direction, of course, working very closely with the South African National Defense Force and ensuring that there is compliance with various regulatory frameworks. In so doing, we are assisting the South African National Defense Force to conduct all that defense commitments in accordance with government policy and strategy, provide the mission that is making sure that the mission-ready capabilities for the defense. The internal processes in terms of how we do it through various administrative functions, and we also have the South African National Defense Force is responsible, the military command is responsible for the employing or deploying the South African National Defense Force in order to enable the Department of Defense Force to the department to do its work. The resource management from the secretariat, the resource management for the military, it goes for the military command for the military command to provide professional and supported DOD human resources, appropriate sustained material, integrated reliable defense information system, and the National Treasury also requires us to talk about something about sustainability of the work that we're doing in the Department of Defense. And to ensure that sustainability, then we have appropriate strategic reserves. We renew the DOD main equipment as well as doctrine and undertake defense research and development in order to ensure sustainability. We promote appropriate defense industry to ensure that we continue to have supplies for the prime mission equipment, as well as promote consensus in our society on the matters of defense. We believe that with all of these elements, we are able to make the work and the plans of the Defense Department sustainable. We will briefly look into the strategic overview, and these strategic priorities that were identified by the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. These are the ones that the Minister then highlights that they must receive attention during this period for the execution through the DOD, that is the Secretariat, as well as the South African National Defense Force. These are the strategic priorities that the Minister has identified for this financial year 2014-15. So maybe one will talk into details now as priorities of the Minister, but I will not have to repeat them when we deal with the various plans, because the plans will be then talking to these priorities of the Minister. The enhancement of the South African National Defense Force landward defense capability. As I indicated, during the strategic acquisition program, the SDPP that was involved earlier on in 2010, we saw the Department of Defense in improving the enhancing the capabilities of the Air Force as well as the capabilities of the Navy. The capabilities of the landward forces of the Army fell behind. now, when you look into the 14-15 Strategic Capital Acquisition Master Plan, what you call SCAM, this is a plan towards acquiring various prime mission equipment. We will find that there is more emphasis, if you want to look at this year's budget, there is more emphasis and the increase on the Army budget, for instance, as opposed to as Air Force or Navy budget, because we needed to enhance the capabilities of the Army. One of the major projects, for instance, that we are rolling out this year is that one of production of infant combat vehicles in a project that has been already approved by the minister and is currently being rolled out by DENEL. The minister highlighted the importance of the maritime security strategy because of rising of the pirate activities, especially on the eastern coast of our continent. Minister felt we should in focus, there should be special attention to the maritime security strategy. And also, this is part of the National Development Plan in terms of fighting transnational crime. And the maritime strategy that has then been developed and is now being integrated into the broader SADC Maritime Security Strategy. This SADC Maritime Security Strategy has already been approved by SADC. South Africa has signed a trilateral agreement with Tanzania and Mozambique on the joint patrols of the Mozambican Channel on the East Coast, and we are now in the process of signing an agreement, trilateral agreement with Namibia and Angola, in order to ensure the maritime security of our western coast as well. The government has highlighted that departments must have a program of job creation as part of its medium-term strategic framework. Yes, we are the first to recognize that the Army or the South African National Defense Force is not there for job creation, because it is there mainly to ensure that the country is defended. Therefore sometimes when people are joining it, people join on voluntary basis, and knowing that the force that they are joining might sometimes require supreme sacrifices to be made. So the emphasis is not such as job creation, but the emphasis on creating a disciplined and a effective fighting force for the defense of the country. The finalization of the defense review, as we have indicated, has now been finalized and approved by the government, has made pronouncement on the national approach and direction relating to the defense industry. We believe that as a department, our contribution will be to support the South African defense industries in order for the job creation and technology transfers to take place at that level rather than at the level of the Department of Defense itself. Now, another priority of the minister has been that of the National Youth Service, which this policy is being developed during this financial year 14-15, so that it can set the norms and standards of the National Youth Service Program. This National Youth Service Program involves the Department of Defense entering into collaboration agreements with various departments. Like, we have entered into collaboration agreement with the Department of Social Development. We have entered into agreements with the Department of Agriculture and Rural Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and we have they will then identify the youth 1,000 up to 1,500 who will come to our facilities in the Department of Defense for various training that they will require in those programs. and the funding then will come from the sponsoring department. That is the National Youth Service, that program that we have, and we are finalizing that policy, although we have already been training. I think this year, financial year, we hope to train about 2,100 or so of the youth in the various programs that we that they will be participating in. The restructuring and support of the defense industry is one of the priorities that the minister has identified, and the defense review, as we have indicated, has dedicated a chapter to this restructuring and support of the defense industry, and that defense review has now been approved, and it calls for the establishment of the National Defense Industry Council, which will be chaired by the minister. We hope this year to launch that National Defense Industry Council, chaired by the minister, to involving various state-owned entities as well as the private sector. One of the priorities is that of the revitalization of the reserve as part of a one-force concept, that whether you are in the reserves or you are in the service of the South African National Defense Force, active service or reserve service, you become part of the one National Defense Force. And the revitalization of the reserve has been one of the priorities of the minister. And this year we have been able to recruit and train university students through a program that we call the University Reserve Training Program. We also have a rejuvenation of the South African National Defense Force through the Military Skills Development System, which serves as a feeder system, not just for the reserves, but also for the South African National Defense Force itself. This Military Skills Development System is a service that supports the rejuvenation of the human resource renewal strategy feeding into the South African National Defense Force. We would have liked to take about 10,000 members of our youth into this program, where they get the military training for about 2 years, and after that they either get absorbed into the reserve force or into the active defense force. But because of limited budget, we are only this year planning to take about 4,272 members of members of the youth into this military skills development system. The focus areas then that has been identified by the minister include the transformation within the South African National Defense Force. I'm not going to go into details, but this transformation mainly relates to the representation of women in the department at all levels of the Department of Defense, including the military command. Also, one of the focus areas is reconfiguration of the force number allocation, which mainly talks to having a uniform system into as part of the integrated South African National Defense Force, so that you don't have different numbers for various categories of the defense force. And this talks most even those who are in retirement and those who are still active, so that there is consistency in the numbers, and this has to be finalized through the financial management system. One of the strategic focus for this year is the establishment of the audit division within the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense is still in the process of establishing an internal audit division. The work was done in 2013, and even now in 2014, we are still advancing in capacitating, or maybe building capacity within the internal audit division. so that we can eventually drive or achieve our goals of operation clean audit in the Department of Defense. The fighting of corruption and fraud has been identified by the minister as one of the strategic focus. And in this regard, we have established anti-corruption hotline, and we drive continuously the corruption and fraud awareness campaign. And we also focus on the DOD procurement policy to ensure that our procurement processes, they comply with the requirements and policies so as to avoid procurement fraud in the department. The Youth Development Program is the program of the national government being driven from the presidency, and the DOD collaborates with the Youth Maintenance Brigade on behalf of the government, and through this we would like as a Department of Defense to see how we can facilitate it as part of our mechanism to rejuvenate the defense force. I would just like to take a few minutes to look into how then the Department of Defense, now that I've looked into the ministerial priorities, now I'll look into how the Department of Defense contributes towards the medium-term strategic framework of the government. Through this, we continue to render support to selected medium-term strategic framework outcomes. The main, as a general rule, the content of these outcomes form the basis for the delivery agreement that is signed between the responsible cabinet member and the president. And through that agreement, then it cascades down to the department in terms of delivering on those outcomes as identified in the medium-term strategic framework. Prior to these general elections, we were part of the chairperson, as a Department of Defense, we were part of the chairperson of the cluster, that is the ICTS cluster, International Cooperation Trade and Security Cluster. And outcome 11 of the MTSF talks to the creating a better South Africa and contributing to a better and safer Africa in the world. Now, after the elections, the current medium-term strategic framework, in the current medium-term strategic framework, the minister is now responsible for the coordination or the chairpersonship of justice, crime prevention, and security cluster. That is the JCPS cluster, which main outcome is outcome number 3 that talks to all people in South Africa are and feel safe. The other outcomes of the MTSF where the department contributes by virtue of its legislative mandate are outcome 2, a long and healthy life for all South Africans, outcome 3, which is our main outcome for delivery, all people in South Africa are and feel safe. And outcome 5, skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth plan. And outcome 11, creating a better South Africa and contributing to a better and safer Africa in a better world. Outcome 12 is that of an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. To the National Development Plan 2030, the DOD has been part of the development of that plan, and it is for the country to, it contributes towards eliminating and reducing inequality through in South Africa and the unleashing energies of its citizens, growing an inclusive economy, building capabilities to enhance capability of the state. The DOD vision also informs government policy that includes that industrial action plan and the new growth plan. Also, as part of the national development plan, the DOD contributes towards the envisaged reduction in youth employment to provide assistance in disaster aid and disaster relief, in supporting combating of maritime pirates along the east coast of Africa, and strengthening the national research and development capacity. We also contribute towards building safer communities, towards building capable and development states, and towards fighting corruption and fraud. All of this has the directives coming from the National Development Plan. To the new growth path, as we indicated, our contribution through the development of the National Youth Service for this year, as well as in the long term, foresee that job opportunities within the defense industry, in accordance with the approved capital acquisition projects, will be created. Towards the Industrial Policy Action Plan, IPAP, the defense review talks mainly about directing the public procurement and enabling long-term acquisition and procurement of defense prime mission equipment from local industry rather than importing that prime mission equipment. I will now go to the core performance information of the Department of Defense. As I said, when I now get to this section of the presentation, you will find that I might have repeated it. It would be a repetition because it all comes from those directives of ministerial priorities, National Development Plan, Industrial Participation Plan, and the Medium-Term Strategic Framework Plan. We remain committed to ensure that our plans are aligned to the various national processes for strategic planning, budgeting, reporting, and risk management. And also we strive towards ensuring that our performance information promotes transparency and expenditure control towards our economy, efficiency, effectiveness, and equity in the use of public resources, and to do so in a way that demonstrates alignment with legislation and national outcome. The following are the high-level criteria that informs, among others, the identification of the DOD expenditure national estimates on annual basis. These are the core indicators, the policy, the output deliverables, the major cost drivers, and trendable information, and we link this to the medium-term strategic framework outcomes as we have highlighted. Now, to look briefly into the selected performance indicators which are present on the coming slides, they form also part of the DOD Defense Vote 22, which has just been approved. Here we are presenting the indicators and targets for this financial year in terms of the number of defense attaches, offices that we would like to open for this financial year. We would like to ensure that we have 41 offices, that is the defense attache offices, and the number of youth development members in this current financial year, as I indicated, these are the youth who are coming in to rejuvenate the South African Defense Force as well as the Reserve Force. We would have liked to have 10,000, but we are targeting 4,000 members of the youth to come to be trained this year. And in terms of the number of Reserve Force man days, this indicator, it was National Treasury that felt it should be changed, so it can be confusing sometimes. But I can just inform the members of the committee that, for instance, last year we had about 21,000 members of the Reserve Force in our database. And out of that 21,000, we called into duty about 14,000. These were members of the Reserve Force who were then deployed in the border safeguarding operations, as well as in our peacekeeping missions and maritime security strategies. But the Treasury, they would like to see targets in terms of financial measurement. So they said that what we need to report on a number of man days, because they can then be able to talk about how much is expected to be spent if we know how many man days you are playing for, because they can safely calculate how much it costs for one man day, and therefore multiplies. So we were saying in that regard, then it's the first time we use this indicator. That's why you don't see these indicators for the previous years, because previous years we're using the, just the number of the reserve force that has been called for to serve. Now it's the first time that we're using this indicator as man days. That for this year, then we were planning on 1.8 million man days to be utilized. In terms of percentage of compliance with the South African with SADC standby force, our commitment to the SADC standby force includes various capabilities, including field hospitals and various logistics and infantry battalion. We are saying that our target is that we would like to meet our commitment to the SADC standby force 100%. In terms of compliance with the number of ordered commitments, these are the external operations. The external operations for this current financial year, we were budgeting for 5 external operations, if we include maritime, DRC, Sudan, as well as others. The last year it was 6, because it included the Central African Republic, which is no longer part of it. And this, the program that they fall in, force employment, landward defense, as well as the defense intelligence operation. And the percentage of compliance with the number of ordered commitments, these are the internal operations whereby South African Self-Defense Force might be called to support the South African police services in protecting the people. We were looking at about 4 of these internal commitments, which include deployment during elections and targeting to meet all of those commitments. The number of the multinational military exercises that we conduct a year, this year we are hoping to conduct about 9 of such exercises, and the number of landward subunits deployed on border for border safeguarding. And this, the members of the committee might just, maybe honorable members might think about this as companies. How many companies are we deploying across our borders? According to our plans in the Department of Defense, to have our borders effectively defended, we have assessed that we need about 22 companies. And right now, because of the limited budget, we have only deployed 13 companies. And we had planned that maybe we should deploy 15 companies, but we know because of the limited resources available to us, we will only deploy 13 companies, to a point whereby sometimes in our documents, even the one that we circulated in Parliament, I think we committed that our target is to deploy 13, and we have deployed 13, because if we say our target is to deploy 15, when you know we can't deploy 15, then at the end of the financial year, we become assessed and evaluated to say we have failed in meeting our indicators, because we did not deploy 15, we only deployed 13. This is part of our forced employment and safeguarding our borders. And the number of forced employment hours that we have flown this year, this we just give the target that this is what we would like, the number of hours that we want to fly this year, and as well as the number of hours that we want to spend at sea, which is, we have calculated at 12,000 hours for this year. These hours, they will include training and deployment for sea rescue, as well as the other operations, for instance, flying hours to assist in flood region areas, might be inside or outside our borders. Briefly to inform the honorable members about the public entities that are reporting to the minister, the executive authority, where it will be AMSCO. I hope that the members of the committee will have the opportunity to invite AMSCO also to present their plans. The Castle Control Board, which operates the Castle of Good Hope, on behalf of the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, that is situated here in Cape Town. It is the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans is the ultimate owner and responsible for that castle. I know that there might be a number of debates and discussions on that one in terms of the various views in terms of that ownership and management of the castle by the Department of Defense. And the Department of Military Veterans, as I indicated, will be presenting after this. The Defense Force Service Commission is one of such organ of state that reports to the Department of Defense. When there was a march by soldiers to the Union Building in 2009, the executive authority at the time took a decision that we need to eliminate the need for unions, for trade unions, the need for trade unions in the military by ensuring that there is a structure and a platform for the members of the Defense Force to express their grievances about the conditions of service. And then a Defense Force Service Commission Act was finally passed by this Parliament in 2010, which established the Defense Force Service Commission, which then acted as that platform to address the conditions of service of the members of the Defense Force so that they don't have to form trade unions, but they can use this platform to address their condition of service. The Reserve Force Council is one of those state entities that report to the executive authority, including the Office of the Military Ombudsman. This was also established by the Act of 2012, again, to ensure that the grievances of the members of the Defense Force are addressed. In other words, if a member of the Defense Force has a grievance that is not being attended to by the military command, they do have an office outside the Department of Defense where the members of the Defense Force can go to raise their grievances. And that office is the Office of the Military Ombud, again, to assist that there should not be a need for military trade unions. The Department of Defense is also a part of the various government departments that have been asked by the presidency as well as the forum for the South African DGs to establish a service delivery improvement plan, what they call SDIPS. This right now, in this current financial year, the DOD is in the process of developing our first service delivery improvement plan, which we hope to conclude by the end of this financial year, and we can then submit them to the Department of Public Service and Administration and the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the President, so that we can then be evaluated and monitored against our own service delivery improvement plan. As I indicated, all of these instruments are linked to our program is linked to our MTEF and the overarching strategic direction, as we have already presented above. Briefly, to look into the budget goals 22, how it stands as we are for this current financial year. The background is that we have interacted with the National Treasury, and the National Treasury indicated that there has been an economic situation deterioration requiring various defense reductions. But last year, just in terms of the process, we submitted our requirements in terms of to the National Treasury in December, so that we are included in the estimates of our national expenditure. This slide is just meant to draw to the attention of the honorable members about the various reductions that we have been subjected to in the National Department of Defense. In other words, when we do the MTF, the Medium Term Expenditure Framework, you will find that you have this budget. Like, for instance, now we say we have an MTF budget of 16-17, but when the budget of 16-17 is announced, you will find that it has been reduced from what it was originally in the MTF. And this highlights these reductions, that by 2010-11 it was reduced by about 1 million, in 11-12 about 1.7 million, and also for this current financial year, when you compare to what it was when the MTF for 14-15 was established, we have now been, that budget has been reduced by 1.2 billion. And the budget for 15-16 and 15-17 have also been reduced in this relative figure that we're giving here. But when the budget itself comes for the 15-16, we're afraid that it might even be more than 1.05 reduction, although this is what is being recorded at this time as reductions in our defense budget. This was the allocation for the 14-15 as came out from the National Treasury. The conditions of service were increased because of the various agreements that have been reached. The Air Force operation had to increase their budget because of their increased involvement in the peacekeeping operation, so was the military health services. But when the demands for conditions of service and the Air Force and military health services are increased, the Department of National Treasury tells us that we meet these increases, we have to find from other programs so that we can transfer money to this. So the program then that we have used were those of special defense, which is for acquisition of equipment as well as goods and services, which is mostly for the operations. When we look at the DoD personnel budget, I think that's where we have identified a shortfall for this current financial year of about 1 billion rand. So as of this current financial year, 14-15, we will have to find 1.1 billion from somewhere, because we don't have, there's a shortage of 1.1 in order to meet our requirements for the personnel expenditure. Now, the options that we have for this shortfall, of course, is to see whether it comes, will it come from other programs, or we have to put measures in place so that we don't maybe fill positions that might be vacant, or we find other options, which might be the combination of the above. But otherwise, this will be the total DoD budget vote for the current financial year. When we look at the 14-15 as well as the compare that to the coming 15-15, we can see that the Landward Defense Force will be taking most of the budget, 32% of the budget, and it increases into the coming financial year, as we have indicated. The reason why we see that increase is because of the major emphasis on the Landward Defense Force capabilities that needs to be improved. Otherwise, the total budget for this budget vote of 22 is 42.8 billion rand for this financial year for the Department of Defense. In terms of the trends, as I indicated, is increasing in the Landward Defense as well as a decrease in air defense later in the outer years of 2017 due to various acquisition projects that by that time should have been concluded. the increase in maritime defense is mainly due to the following acquisitions that are coming, which will be the offshore patrol vessels, the hydrographic vessels, as well as other patrol vessels, and including the heavyweight torpedo capability that is required by the submarine, as well as we're also looking forward to increased military support, mainly due to additional allocation that has been made available for the military health services to be able to take care of increased clientele as it were, if it's going to include the military veterans as well. We are also seeing a little bit of increase in the general support because of the capability that we are in the process of building within the Department of Defense. This is Defense Works Commission, so that the work that has been done by the Department of Public Works in maintaining our facilities, our military bases, should now be done by the Department of Defense itself. I won't go into details here. We are just breaking down the same budget into various categories, and this refers to the I think this should be the end of our presentation, Honorable Chairperson, because this part deals with the certain requirements that the Portfolio Committee on Defense had asked us to address for their committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Secretary. I would like to ask from the members, because the military veteran is supposed to present. Can we allow the military veteran to present, or we can? Okay. So let's go for the military veteran to present, then we'll ask questions later. Thank you very much, Secretary.
Honorable Chair and members, the Department of Military Veterans, we thank you for this opportunity that we have this morning to make our presentation on our APP, and at the end we'll give some of the performance on our APP to date, and then I also just want to start with making at least an apology on behalf of one of our other DDGs. She was out in Mpumalanga at our last check, doing monitoring of programs out in Mpumalanga, and so that is why we
to register for the vote. Colleagues, ours today is to make a presentation on the Military Veterans Mandate, and the scope will be as provided. It will be in terms of why are we here, the introduction, the strategic overview, programs and sub-programs, the core performance information conclusion. Just to indicate that this presentation is the same one that was presented in the portfolio committee on defense and military veterans, the same one that was presented at Treasury with the aim of checking the alignment. The aim then is to provide an overview of DMV performance and its link to strategic budgeting. Who are we? We are a department that was established through a proclamation by the President, and that was gazetted on the 28th of December 2009. Our mandate is to give substance to the provisioning of justifiable and justiciable socioeconomic benefits as articulated in Section 5, right together with Section 3 of the Military Veterans Act. The department then is mandated to formulate policies and standards aimed at providing comprehensive service delivery through partnership with other organs of state and civil society to military veterans and their dependents in recognition of their role in the democratization of South Africa. As such, the delivery of military veterans' mandate situates itself then within the social and economic cluster, and to enable them to secure a footing, the department is actually participating not only within the defense, public and security and safety, but also within health and social protection environment. The department, as articulated by the accounting officer, currently is located within the military defense and military veterans vote, and it operates there as a transfer payment from 2012 fiscal year. So the introduction then, by way of introduction, we want to make case that the presentation that we are going to make is aligned to the requirements from Treasury. It's also aligned to the strategic plan 2012-2016 with amendments then that are required in terms of that framework annually to align to the government trajectory. It's aligned to government outcomes and priorities, MTSF 14-2019. Also to the National Development Plan, and also it talks to the requirements of the Forum of South African Director Generals, the Foresight Implementation Plan 2014 to 2019, and it also alludes to the requirements articulated in the Management Performance Assessment Tool that is driven by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. The outlay of our strategic planning instruments in three parts: strategic overview, the programs and sub-programs and links to other plans, which is actually as mandated by the framework. By way of a strategic overview, we want to say what drives us is the vision of an end state of a dignified, unified, empowered, and self-sufficient military veterans community. The means to do that is to facilitate delivery and coordinate all activities that recognize and entrance the restoration of dignity and appreciation of the contribution of military veterans to our freedom and nation building. This is articulated through a strategic map, and the strategy map then, which actually then is a display of how the department's mandate is articulated in terms of outcome-based planning. It talks to the outcome and impact, which then is a dignified, unified, empowered, and self-sufficient military veterans community. And the outputs to realize that are the socio-economic support, the empowerment and stakeholder, which are our key service delivery outputs. And then we have an enabler, which is the provision of a sound policy and administration. The activities then as stipulated in Treasury are the normal ones: administer, enable, and deliver. The inputs then, which are the ones that we articulate all the time and will continue to articulate also in this committee for support in getting the funds, are the provision of HR support, financial management, adequate infrastructure, and indicated information management system and intelligence. We hope to invest into the future through appropriate research policy, promoting global presence, ensure consensus on defense and on military deterrence, and also then promote adequate footprint. The mandate that drives this organization is firstly the act that was promulgated in 2011, the Military Veterans Act, of course, the Bill of Rights, the governance then being driven by the PFNA, federal regulations, the nature of the plans being driven by the framework on managing government information, and the framework on strategic planning, the architecture of the organization being driven by the public service regulation. We want from the onset to articulate that as we began to implement the act and the regulations, we have then since identified the areas that need some amendments, and the department has hard at work to ensure that such amendments are actually dealt with. And the amendments also then will be based on the Military Veterans Benefit Regulations that were gazetted on the 19th of February 2014. We also want to say from a policy perspective, the department will be finalizing the following: public transport support for military veterans, the military veteran social relief of distress, the military veterans pension, military veterans heritage, and the policy on stakeholder management. Flowing from the strategy map, the department then is having a structure that drives its mandate. And the structure is as indicated. We have the executive authority, we have the deputy, and linked to and or aligned to or reporting to or providing support and advice to the executive authority or the ministry are three statutory bodies that are established in terms of the act, and these are Advisory Council on Military Veterans, the Military Appeals Board, and as was established in September last year, a South African National Military Veterans Association, which is established in terms of Section 7(1) of the Military Veterans Act, and it was published by way of a gazette. We then have an accounting officer for the Military Veterans Mandate, and the accounting officer is supported through three programs. These being the two outputs, military veterans, the socio-economic support, and empowerment and stakeholder. And we then have the norms and standards are provided through the corporate services. And supporting then the accounting officer is the internal audit function and the office. If one moves to the socio-economic support mandate, it is translated or delivered through various sub-outputs, which are carried through in terms of the program that we see, military veterans and well-being, the support service, and socio-economic management. Just to indicate that the Chief Director of Research and Policy had an analysis to be aligned to its core function of norms and standards, and it does move to the corporate services branch. The second output branch, service delivery, being the socio-economic, where you have provincial office and stakeholder management. You also have a chief directorate that deals with heritage, and you have the one that deals with skills development. Within corporate services, like I have indicated, you have then the migrated chief directorate of search and policy, strategic support, then you have financial management and human resource management. Just to indicate also that the financial management, in line with the PFMA, has to migrate to the office of the DG. What drives the department in line with the strategy map other priorities which are referred to executive authority priorities. These priorities are an analysis of the mandate from the Act and the governance mandate from the various pieces of legislation. They are as follows. Priority one, a fully functional department with its independent budget voting system. Two, provision of social relief to the most vulnerable military veterans. Three, provision of support service to military veterans and their dependents where applicable. And these relate to education, training and skills development, health support, provision of public transport, housing, and burial support. Just to indicate that priority three captures 99% of what is articulated in Section 5.1 of the Military Veterans Act, which is about the benefits. Priority four deals with promoting empowerment programs for and of military veterans. And within that priority, we're looking at various means which entail the facilitation of preferential procurement mechanisms, operationalization of the special purpose vehicles, facilitation of employment placement, and facilitation of advice and business opportunities. In this priority, you will see some of the benefits that are coming also from Section 5.1. Priority 5 promotes the military veterans' heritage as well as memorialization. Here we are looking at establishment of the tomb of the unknown soldier, restoration of graves of the Liberation War military veterans, establishment of heroes and heroines' acres, and even that priority talks to Section 5.1 of the Military Veterans Act. Priority 6 deals with strengthening the governance and oversight protocols that give effect to the provisions of the Act. In this regard, the Act creates SPANVA, it creates the Advisory Council, it creates the Appeals Board. It also creates a special purpose vehicle which is articulated through the regulation. Finally, from the government's perspective, then the audit committee that deals then with issues of governance. Priority 7, maintenance of a credible and secure database, and priority 8, implementation of a high impact communication and marketing strategy and plan. These are the priorities that inform the delivery of the military veterans mandate, and these are the priorities that form, that foreground the planning instrument over the medium-term strategic framework, and these are the priorities according to which reporting is done. Coming now to the alignment of the military veterans mandate with the government trajectory, the slide that we have now is looking at how then the mandate aligns to the medium-term strategic framework, how it aligns to the national development plan, and of course, the money being rooted in the executive authority's priorities. In terms of the MDP, we have chapter 13. I will move on the excesses, I just said as an example, but I won't get to the detail of all the slides. But if you go to government outcomes, you have outcome 12, which is articulating what is in chapter 13. But within DMV's priorities as articulated by the minister, that is visible, is delivered through and monitored through ensuring a fully functional department with its independent vote systems and processes. Chapter 6 of the MDP talks about an integrated and inclusive economy. It then triangulates with outcome 7, which talks with two vibrant, equitable, sustainable world. And then it extrapolates, or it gets extrapolated within the executive authority's priorities that define what DMV is doing through the provision of immediate social relief and of distress of military veterans. Chapter 10 of the MDP dealing with promoting health. Chapter 9, dealing with improving education, training and innovation. Chapter 3, on economy and employment. Fines is given substance to them by outcome 1, quality basic education. Outcome 2, long and healthy lifestyle. Outcome 4, decent employment. Outcome 5, skills and capable workforce. 1 goes to the priority that talks, the priority 3, you will find them that priority actually articulates health issues, education issues, placement issues, skills development, and advice. Chapter 8 of NGP, Chapter 6, Chapter 15, link to Outcome 7 and Outcome 8, and those deal with, in terms of executive priorities, housing, burial support, and pension. Again, Chapter 15, which talks about transforming the society and uniting the country and promoting social cohesion, is articulated in the MTSF is government outcome 14, which is actually currently shared by the Department of Arts and Culture with the Department of Military Veterans. This outcome then is delivered or is planned through the executive authority's priority that deals with the promotion of military veterans' heritage as well as memorialization. I will not repeat those, because those are the priorities I have referred to. I've referred to outcome 15, I won't repeat. I've referred to outcome 14, I won't repeat that, and I will jump then to how is the department contributing to the Foresight Implementation Plan 2014-2019. During the medium term, the department has committed to focus on the achievement of targets set by Foresight, and these are ensuring that performance agreements of the accounting officer is signed by the executive authority and submitted, develop and approve effectively implement and monitor service delivery improvement plan for the department. At this point, it is worth indicating that the service delivery improvement plan, as in terms of Treasury Regulation 5, is contained in the planning instruments, and that is the basis on which then the service delivery improvement plan is being articulated at this point in time. Ensure that feed level of all cases from anti-corruption or suicide are provided. Maintain the current status of obtaining an unqualified outcome. Ensure that all financial disclosures of peer management are concluded. Ensure that cases from presidential hotline are resolved and submit exception reports. Honorable members will know that the Foresight Implementation Plan is one of the plans that is monitored monthly at cluster meetings, and the department has committed through the administration program of its APP to make sure that all managers, all employees, comply with the requirements. Government has approved the Management Performance Assessment Tool, which is an instrument that enables departments to ensure readiness towards the management practices and audits. The department also commits to ensuring that the internal controls will be improved in line with those requirements and will participate as a way of improving from year to year. These include the authorization of the DMV integrated strategic management system that will improve effectiveness of strategic planning processes, risk management, strategic budgeting, and performance monitoring and evaluation. And currently the department is hard at work with CETA to develop the system. Also, to ensure that evaluation of critical programs of the department are both conducted internally as part of the national evaluation plan. The department has registered an evaluation plan with CPME, and it will continue conducting evaluations. ensure that all human resource management policies and strategies are developed, ensure the effective implementation of BOSCAS, and will be participating, like we've indicated, in the upcoming MPAD. Moving to programs and sub-programs, I will set off then with the allocation, and I will just indicate that the allocation members will remember that the allocation for this particular mandate moves from 20 million to throughout the fiscal year to 504 in 14, 15, 16, and 17. So the transfer then is from 504 to 641. But we want to make a case that as we begin to implement the act and the regulation, the need for us to look at the costing and a number of issues that come as part of implementation, which require more funding in terms of ensuring that the machinery is able to deliver the services. But as we speak, that is the allocation. And as you will realize, you will have the administration program, which is 178. And at this point, I must highlight that the administration program that you see, the biggest part of what it has is the office accommodation, where you have infrastructure requirements for all the programs. And as such, those infrastructure requirements are put together in the administration program. Hence, it seems to be bigger than any other of those allocations, but the reality is their infrastructure requirements are contained in the administration program. I thought I must actually highlight that. If one then goes to the score classification, you will then see that you have compensation of employees, goods and services, and payment of capital assets. Moving to program one, the highlighted section is the one that tells the story, and as you can see, you will have the greatest amount there under office accommodation, and it actually articulates what I have indicated in terms of administration program. That is the score classification for program one. We move to program two. Program two, we have 168, and it has been divided in terms of all those staff outputs. And in terms of score classification, we have what we have on the screen. As you can see, payment of capital assets is nil because it's covered under the administration program. Allow me to move to program three, which is economic empowerment and stakeholder. And the amount is as highlighted for the current fiscal year. And as I've indicated, if one goes to score classification, the payment of capital assets is not included for the same reason. Chairperson, allow me to move to the core indicators. The tangible indicators, the indicators on which the money is paid, the indicators that are articulated in the estimate of national expenditure. But also allow me to indicate that the fiscal and the test has actually called for us to relook some of the targets, which we have done with Treasury recently, and might affect the ENE indicators. I feel I need to articulate that so that it's understood that it's on the basis of fitting what we have to do within the clause that we have. Those indicators are the indicators that deal with access to healthcare, access to housing, access to training, memorial sites to be erected, and the private sector companies, and that is provided over the MTA. I want to reiterate, given the escalation of prices and given the fiscal constraints that we have, some of the indicators had to be relooked, and so over the period, over the MTEP, we are going to experience some revision of the indicators where it's absolutely necessary, but we will report as such. Now, I'm presenting now the performance information in terms of each program. And I just want to say what you see in terms of our administration program is exactly as required in terms of the foster implementation plan, because the aim was to use the indicators as agreed by government. And so you have then the financial disclosures, you have the Auditor General's opinion, you have the planning instruments, you have the monitoring instruments, you have the communication strategy. And those are the indicators and the projections over the MTEP. That's again administration. We're dealing with the other indicators that deal with the administration that are within the administration program, that deal with human resource, that deal with the anti-corruption hotline, that deal with a link with clusters, that deal with performance agreements, as articulated again in the foster implementation plan. Here we're dealing with funded posts, which again is in the foster, the risk management, and of course the improvement of public perception. Also as extracted from the government indicators as provided. Coming to the service delivery branch, you will observe, Chairperson, that the indicators that you see there are the same as the ones that you saw at Trendable, because those indicators are the ones that hang the money that was given, but now they are linked to the branch where they originate. The same with ESM, we have then the established fully functional SPV, deserving military veterans that have access to training, reduction in the level of unemployed, especially in the non-statutory force military veterans, the number of military veterans in rural sites erected, the number of strategic initiatives, and the number of private sector companies. As you can see, in this particular program, there is an indicator that is in the ENE, but not all of them, because the indicators are a requirement in terms of number of indicators that you should provide for the estimate of national expenditure. By way of conclusion, Chair, we want to indicate, and we want to applaud the National Treasury that for the first ever, we got an allocation in 2013-14, which helps to actually give substance to Section 26 of the Military Veterans Act. However, we want to place on record that the Department could not access the fund because the regulations that provide the basis on which the funds must be dispersed had to be approved. And these were developed, consultation was done, letters of consensus were written, but finally the approval was then obtained, and the gazetting happened only on the 19th of February. And that left the department with less than a month to be able to implement. But the department wants to indicate that 2014 is the year and the first year when the department now is implementing without or with limited financial constraints. And we want to indicate that the availability of resources and the requisite policies will thus enable the department to contribute more meaningfully to moving South Africa forward and to enhancing radical socio-economic transformation.
Thank you very much, Defense and Military Veterans, for this
presentation. Siyabonga, we are lebogile. Honorable members, you can ask for questions, clarity, comments. Over to you. Can see. Honorable member, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just have four quick questions. Not sure who to pose it to. My first question is, in May 2013, there were reports of new training plans for the military. Are there such plans in place? What do they entail? And when are they expected to be enforced? My second question is, on the 17th of June 2014, there was the accident with the Cessna C-208 near Ladenburg. Is there any indication yet from the department as to what was the cause of that accident? Third question is regarding the 15th Squadron Coastal Command. As far as I can establish, they're not currently being used for sea rescue as they're supposed to be. Could the department just perhaps say why not and what they're currently being used for? And then my final question is if it's possible that anyone within the department could perhaps tell me why the Chief of the Defence Force hasn't bothered to appear before the Portfolio Committee, this committee, or the Joint Standing Committee for the last 5 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Member. Madam Chair. Thank you. Now I'll come to
you. Okay, thanks.
Did you?
Yes.
No, I'll come to you.
Sir, I think I will directly go to firstly, I will start vice versa. I won't start with the defense itself. I prefer to start with the issues of military veterans. Sir, my question is whether we want, perhaps there won't be having the seniority that perhaps they were expecting, but I will just question, ask them random. I think they will just take note of that. Chair one, on issues of health and wellness programs for military veterans. We understand that military veterans are covered with medical cover, but the challenge is there that their children, their wives are not covered. And it's sort of discriminatory. Because how can the father benefit military health care while his own child doesn't benefit? Can you get clarity on that one? And what is the solution there? Again, on the issue of under administration, we understand that military veterans are now in one umbrella body, which is termed Nsamba. Which Nsamba must be catered by the Department of Military Veterans. The question, therefore, is in regard to infrastructure and the personnel of the very same institution. They have their secretaries, they have their chairpersons, which is, I mean, almost most of the province will be launched, yeah, as we were told. And we want to know, how far are you in establishing offices for these institutions? Because it's where they coordinate their issues. I think they cannot, from Eastern Cape, go to Pretoria, where DMV offices is being housed. The other question perhaps that I wanted to establish with the Department of Military Veterans is in regard to the database
affected because of some challenges within those programs. How far are you with the program of updating the database itself?
Yeah, I think so far I was just pause there in regard to inter veterans and perhaps if you'll give me another chance, your question, I will then ask other questions. Thank you.
Honorable Manipule.
Thank you, sir. My first one is with regards to the transformation. I think the secretary in the presentation raised the issue that they don't have necessary in the briefing information with regards to the transformation. So I would like us to, as a select committee, to then they must clarify to us and give us the current status of the transformation within the Defence Force. Since we are on the era of radical transformation, so we can't be not be taken into confidence by the department, and then also it will disable us as a parliamentarian to play oversight if you don't have sufficient information. And with regards to the issue of maritime defense, the presentation, there was a slide, I don't know which page it said. It explained about 12 hours of the view. And then also the secretary's place says it's about flying training. We just want to, if you can also explain to us the formula, how do they calculate and allocate time to different vessels? And then also explain to us the anti-piracy operations plan, if they do have the plan that they have in place. And also the training that they conduct in the preparation for the activity. With regards to, I think military veterans. No, before I move to military veterans, the Ombudsman military report is there. And there's a portion that said that they annually present the report to the minister. I'd like to check the impartiality of the Ombudsman. If they report to the minister, how is it regarded? Because of also that the allocation of the budget comes from them. So we also not noting if the grievances and the due justice to the do really do the work for them. With regards to the military veterans, I think the department knows that as a NCOP, we are delegates from the province. So we are very balanced. And then if you don't give us the information with regards to different provinces, you are disabling us because we are presenting the constituencies here. Just one is the also for here that the awards of the benefits. If you can just maybe give us the breakdown, how it's been distributed between the provinces with the results. We understand that the challenge of the capacity of the department and the ongoing use of their consultants. But just want to check, is the plan in place to ensure that to improve the capacity internally? Because of if we are within the developmental stage, we have to ensure that we do build the capacity. At some stage, we have to ensure that we are ready to ensure that to take over the work that is done by the consultants cannot be ongoing. There must be a plan in place. In conclusion, you made a qualification with regards to the budget, and then I'm tempted to ensure that we can check that your recommendation raised the issue that the minimum budget that we have. But if you can explain to us, because of we had a challenge last year, last financial year, where we had only 1 month to spend. But that's what we check if the money now is being. We go and engage, make some recommendations so that the budget will improve. What will the plans be in place to ensure that the expense of the budget will be utilized?
plan to come again, Honorable Shanga. But, okay, let me give another one. And
thank you, Chairperson. Let me say I congratulate the information that is taken in front of us. The Select Committee of the National Council of Businesses. First and foremost, Chairperson, I wanted to understand what is put in place by the defense in terms of spending patterns of their budget so that they can have a clean audit. And secondly, now we are in 20 years. What are the reasons of not making capacitate or increase the women attaches? What are the reasons? Because in this life, 25, there's a transformation within. And when you go to that life, then there has never been taken care of. What are the reasons for that? Secondly, in this configuration of what number, they are saying in this light, I need a clarity. The current configuration of force members does not enhance the required force integration and cohesion. That line itself, I would like to clarify. They identify that. What mechanism did they put in place to correct that issue? Chairperson, I wanted to make a strong comment. In my understanding, from the perspective I'm coming from the collective of COSATU, I can understand military or defense as a whole can be an essential service. But I'm very disappointed in the transformation of our country. When a person was given a ruling from the court, they undermined that. And secondly, there was a research that has been put to speed our foot soldiers in small grains are getting very, very, very small salary packages. According to the work they are doing. Because each and every worker must have the amount deserved in that 8 hours or more. And I would like to understand how far did they correct that, because the evidence was even broadcasted on the media. That's embarrassment. We designed laws of Labor Relations Act and it was approved and it's addressed in the Constitution. But the authorities are undermining those laws that you cannot allow. That's a comment. Let me come to the issue. How far did they revise this size? Is it Port St. John's? Because I'm coming from the Eastern Cape. There was an issue that Port St. John's is going to be revised as a base, one of the bases of Defence Force. How far is that program? Chairperson, let me go to the military, the veterans, I'm sorry. This program is close to us, more especially in the Eastern Cape. The weekend of 18th, the day of 15 days, the NK member was buried in Flavoring. How are you connecting to those activities via municipalities? The name is Mr. Anabe. Secondly, Chairperson, how many veterans that we are talking about currently, irrespective of their rank,
some senator and I was in the legislature in the Center of Health in the Eastern Cape, went to Tanzania to see the people who were forced back. I wanted to understand how the military section linking to the liberation movement. They are quiet in their report. How they link with the family when there is a bereavement. Because I can lift this, I can come to 15 people that have gone in terms of being buried. Chairperson, there's an issue of health within this military veteran. How they link it? Because on the 14th February, there was a link, if I'm not mistaken, of the date, that the ex-miner has a section within O.R. Tambo district in the Nelson Mandela Academy, where they get treatment almost a month. What is their program linking to that, having a specified special place where the veteran can go for health issues currently? They are talking about the budget. I wanted to understand in their screening, because the military veterans, even these current soldiers are going to be military veterans tomorrow. What they put in place in terms of knowing that the people who are within the line function, some of them are those people who were in exile, for instance, who were inside, for instance, all those sorts of other organizations that have those people who claim to be veterans, believe military veterans. I don't think they are flying in name or in the issue of line function in terms of linking the information. This is the last question. The defense itself is complaining that their budget every now is cut by some percentage. My question is, if there are agreements outside, that those agreements didn't talk to the budget when they are budgeting before they present themselves to the president. So that at least there should be a gap between what is going to be budgeted for them, because it's them they propose the budget. Maybe I can say what format are they, their format, is it relevant to the current situation in terms of agreements that they are signing with other countries in terms of assistance. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Julia.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll be short and sweet. I'd just like to know, in terms of personnel, do you have enough skilled personnel? Because I couldn't get from the presentation what's the status quo on your skilled personnel is. For this financial year, do you by any chance experience a brain drain in the SA Navy or even in the SA Air Force, and if so, what are your plans to retain employees? Because I recall every year there's a story of a brain drain in the SA Defense Force. And can you also please supply information regarding key vacant positions in the SANDF? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. I think Honorable Sang will be short. It was your presentation.
Thanks, Chair. I think I will
first go to the border issues. This is actually more of a challenge that I always ask when I meet, when we always meet, I think you will conquer with me, Shepherd. The border issue in Mpumalanga. You go to your Mbuzini, your what you call Rosinegar or commercial coast. At least there's some pushing, there's an escarpment. But from somewhere there at your tunnels towards your Mbuzini areas and so on, there's no fence. There's no fencing. Who is responsible for constructing those border lines to make sure that our country was protected? The other question is, I want you to explain the implication of implementation of the defense revenue in terms of the personnel, equipment, weapons, etc. What plan has been undertaken in preparation for the implementation of the defense revenue? The other one around the rejuvenation, what training programs will be embarked on to achieve this rejuvenation program? What plans are in place to maintain military vehicles and equipment? To what extent do we plan to work achieving that goal? Now, on your how are helicopters being maintained? What plans are in place to ensure that personnel and helicopters are always ready to protect South Africa? Further question on this one, the issue of the executive flight. The procurement committee or whatever committee that deals with this matter, I believe we can get a clarity in terms of our executive flights. In what is the standard? Is it now safe? And if not safe, how soon are we going to proclaim a new flight for our executive? Chairperson, on the issue of force numbers, I think this one helps. It will assist the defense itself from the racial base. Because I understand some of them were termed 1994, some of them were 1970 and so on. So they still have racial basis in terms of ranking. Those who are from 1994, they get this advantage to be ranked as expected, whether they are qualifying or what. I think the issue of ranking figurations will assist us in terms of that one. Then, Chairperson, I just want to have the right here on your disaster management issues. Just to ask whether it is not possible from the duty of the military veterans to also head the rider from the veterans to make joint ventures with the Department of Defense on this operation, particularly on disaster management and issues, because veterans are qualifying to assist globally in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your questions. Before I hand over to defense and military veterans, just two questions that I need to know. I want to know the plans have been put in place by the department to address the implementation of the defense review in terms of new policy. Why I'm asking this question, that's because also the president, in his State of National Address, he said the continent was in agreement over the establishment of a research response unit to intervene during the outbreak of conflict. To me, it was commendable that the defense review called for a long-term plan for the military in its response. Then another question, just one question in the military veteran. I want to know why the DG and the DDG corporate services suspended. If we can just get the clarity
this matter. Lastly, how are the housing benefits awarded to members of the of military veterans? And are these existing houses or newly built houses? If you just explain there, then I can say you can respond. Either we start with the defense and then military veterans.
Yeah.
Remember.
Thank you very much for allowing me. The paper here. On slide 21, at 22, which talks about National Youth Service, I think the Secretariat raised the issue that they are playing support to the different departments, like the social service and agriculture. But now, one to check with the department, they have made an assessment, the impact of the program towards those departments, because of VA salaries. With regards, even though the sponsors, the money comes, the budget comes from those departments, the impact in your department, how it has been done towards your department, towards ensuring that any challenges that needs to be intervention with the department or for those programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Over to you, defense, military veteran. The only thing that I was not aware is that there's a difference between the army and defense. So tell what you know, I was going to see. So thank you, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. We've been requested to start. To put from a very broad perspective, because there's a question that permeates throughout around how the awarding comes, and it strongly comes in one of the last questions, especially the chair on housing. One of the things that is seriously considered, chair, is number one, the budget that's available, and if one looks at the act, it does talk of a means test. And the means test does assist us. Otherwise, if we had a very open system, one would be challenged in terms of the budget that's available. So that's the one element that is used. The second element that is used in terms of determining the awards is looking at prioritizing the NSF force members, the former NSF. It's an important determinant to make, because the question then follows immediately, why them and not the remainder of the forces? In terms of the structure as it existed then, you would find that those who were in the statutory forces did have access to benefits of sorts. And therefore, now that you've got the widening of scope and the military veterans, including your non-statutory forces, one has to look at their status. Many military veterans, if not all of them, from the non-statutory have never had jobs for the past 20 years. Coming back from exile, despite having very good qualifications in some instances, and others not having qualifications, having limited access to job opportunities, and all the factors that would encourage and bring them back into the mainstream of the economy, it therefore forces us to have that type of consideration. So it, those two are at least two of the key considerations that we utilize to make sure that the former non-statutory force members are brought to the fore and catered for appropriately. A question was raised about the type of house that is given, whether it's a previously built home or a brand new home. There's an MOU that we have with the Department of Human Settlements, and through Human Settlements, we do a top-up on the housing benefit on newly built homes that are out there. So the standard is taken from Human Settlements, who fund these to the value of at least 110
collaboration with the line function department. So we won't deliver the health service. We work in conjunction with the Department of Health, with SAMS through the Defense Force, with the Department of Human Settlement, with social development for the social relief of distress. So we've got MOUs across government to make sure that we assist by focusing on the military veteran as a person to fast track access to service delivery across government departments. So that's where we feature quite strongly.
Just a question. I'm not. I wanted to cover the perspective. What I was requesting for a clarity was that in the Department of Health, there's a portion that has been designed for ex miners. It's not coming from the miners. It's not coming from the Department of Energy. That's the thing I'm wanting to be able to clarify on it. So my question is, how far have you gone to that program? For instance, let me tell an example. You said in the Eastern Cape, ORCAM, we've got 50 military veterans. Can't you please make a memorandum of understanding to cooperatives in this program of X minor, because the specific special machines that are going to be utilized to those people, because a lot of TB and so forth. That's the issue that I'm not saying as a section do that. In your memorandum of
Chair, what I was attempting was to give the broad response, and yes, the memoranda of understanding gradually will do extend in that way. Honorable also asked about what is our relationship with municipalities, and we're beginning to establish more and more memoranda of understanding with municipalities so that we can, first of all, engage them and tap into service delivery at the coal face for military veterans, utilize the mechanics that they have, especially when one looks at providing burial support and looking at structures such as Heroes Acres. One of our deliverables is to establish Heroes and Heroines Acres. However, if I take Johannesburg housing, for example, you've got West Park Cemetery that has got quite a large section which is designed as a hero and heroine's acre, and you've got a number of cemeteries. So one of the things that we're currently doing is working in conjunction with structures is first developing a database of current sites such as those so that we know where to do the first spend on establishing new ones. One would not want to go in and then have additional unwarranted expenditure by identifying a site which is very close to a site that might be in existence. So there are areas we are collaborating with and drawing up memoranda with municipalities to be able to effect service delivery very close to the coal face for our military veterans. With regard to some of the other questions, I am going to open for our colleagues. I'm going to talk to the database as well very quickly, Chair, from where I sit. And with the database, the question came is how far are we with the database? And where we are now is the database is protected to a large extent. But what we are busy with is integrating the database development with the update and improvement in our own ICT structure, so that ultimately there is an agreement that our planning unit is engaging in together with corporate services, and we're working closely with CETA so that our infrastructure program and making sure that the integrity of our infrastructure is properly put in place, and linked to that is further strengthening the database so that it becomes absolutely super tight and so we're going through that particular process, but on a daily basis, there is the manual update of the database for people who come in and out of the building, and therefore to facilitate that there's access for people and for more military veterans through the process. The verification program is also one of the areas of updating the database, and in the new month of August, we're going to be resuming with the verification, and after discussion with our executive authority, we'll be resuming with the getting the Azanla verification process back on track and completed, and that will then ensure that we have the Azanla, former Azanla force members, also on the database, and therefore giving them access to benefit as the beneficiaries themselves, as well as the beneficiaries then being able to access. So it's at a level where on a daily basis there's that manual update, but overall, as the ICT infrastructure and architecture is being developed, building that into that, so that eventually the one other question that comes is, how will provinces then be capacitated? The part of the ICT infrastructure is, as there's a visit to provinces to look for office space for provinces, we're talking to the Department of Public Works to make sure that we access office space in all provinces. And every time a visit has been made to have that discussion, our ICT team has been part of that, so that we look at the office space, line it up with the architecture for ICT, so that in one go we can put that in place and then have national access for the database with the limitations at the various levels, so that when a military veteran walks in to a provincial office, once we have the buildings in place, we will be able to start identifying and verifying them from that level without people having to come up to Pretoria to have their services rendered for them at that particular point. I'm going to ask ICT to also assist, and we also have Mbulelo from Communications and Broadly. So let me start with Mbulelo first to add on.
Thanks, Chairperson, members and colleagues. Most of the issues that the members would have asked have to a great extent been covered. If I was to introduce myself, not introduce myself, I'm a former combatant of Mkhondosisi, and therefore the issue that was being asked about the need to ensure that there's a conscious employment of military veterans, because part of our deliberate efforts, I can name a range of them that were within the camp. I can also name those who might have been in ABLA. I can name a range of them. So that we have made a conscious decision that we are going to become an employment of choice in the department. We have engaged that with the executive authority, the deputy minister. So there is a program to make sure that that is affirmed. So rest assured that we are very clear from a decision point that we are going to affirm military veterans, so that the profile and character of the department reflects the military veteran community. Secondly, we have gone beyond just military veterans. We've employed their kids as beneficiaries. I can indicate that our call center now is manned by military veteran kids, all of them. I can indicate that in 10 that are working in the department, majority are military veteran kids. So that is an indication it's work in progress, and we want to assure you we'll give you progress as we move along, that we are going to make sure that the complexion of this department reflects the community that it represents. The second point is around Sandra. Honorable Mklanga raised a point that what are we doing to assist Sandra as an entity that we established, reconstituted last year, as an entity within the DMV. Indeed, last year on the 29th of September to the 2nd of October, we held a conference, and the honorable member was there, so he does know that we were conscious that we must ensure that we strengthen the capacity of that entity so that we deliver effectively and efficiently to military veterans. What we've done is to set aside an amount of money in negotiation with the entity to make sure that issues of infrastructure, offices, and them are dealt with. I'm sure you will recall that in the budget vote speech that the Deputy Minister delivered last week on the 23rd, there was a public policy statement that indicated the fact that indeed we'd walk the talk. We have allocated some money that is going to establish a secretariat because we recognize the constitution of SANVA and enjoins and obliges us as an entity under the DMV to ensure that it functions. We'll set aside money that is going to ensure that provincial offices are set up as a matter of urgency, their secretaries are supported, as well as national office. In fact, as late as 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting with the national office bearers of SANVA to make sure that that process is fast-tracked. Our goal is to ensure that by the end of this quarter, the second quarter, those plans are in action. It's a question of consulting with national treasury. We would have been alive to the fact that when we do things with entities, we're also guided by policy and prescripts of government in relation to how you do things. So we want to be cautious so that we do not find ourselves in a very dangerous space in terms of audits as well as how governance arrangements ought to turn themselves in departments. So we're very clear that working with SANVA will find a lasting solution assisted by National Treasury. That's on course. But in addition to that, we already want synergy. If there's anything that's going to defeat our very same purpose and goal of effective and efficient service delivery is when we work in fragmented manner. So as we are establishing our own provincial offices, let me also indicate that we also have established 9 provincial coordinators and their assistants, all of them, military veterans also. So as they work, they must work with SANVA so that there's synergy and better and efficient service to the client, the military veteran. So we're very conscious that as we'll fix the car while it's moving, and there's an issue of making sure our infrastructure of DMV speaks to infrastructure of SANVA, and therefore there's accountability on budget in an efficient, effective way and in line with the prescripts of government. The database, I want to give concrete data. We're starting on the 5th across the provinces. We're starting in Gauteng, and we'd like all the provinces to assist us as we move along to make sure that we complete the issue of verification of military veterans. When we get to the Northern Cape, we expect that we'll be there to assist us to make sure veterans come and use that opportunity. We'll expect Mpumalanga to have the same, we'll expect Eastern Cape. So we want to believe that for us to complete the database, which is a mission critical success factor of the department, because for us to deliver the right service to the right person at the right time at the right place, we will require to make sure that the information is accurate, because we also understand that of late we have very curious military veterans. People who are 17 years old are also military veterans of late. And it's not a joke to the extent that we are beginning to realize that people want, because now there's money, it's no more the issue of struggle to sacrifice your life. It's about access to benefits that the state wants to provide in honor of those who fought for this country. So everybody all of a sudden has become a military veteran, even young kids. Now for us to verify, we are then indulging that we must work with provinces, we must make local government and everybody to assist us to make sure the right beneficiaries get what the state wants to give to them. So we'll be visiting provinces, we'll share with you the schedule of all provinces, and we want to indulge you to work with us to make sure that people assist us to complete this process. And my colleague alluded to one important fact. When we consulted with the Military Veterans Formation, MKMVA, APLA MVA, Azanla MVA, as well as the Deputy Minister and the Minister, it became very clear that the issue of the database, to a great extent, we can complete it within a short space of time. Because when the CPR list was made, the Certified Personnel Register, which is what all the data of the various community of military veterans organizations submitted to the state in 1994 when the South African National Defense Force was being established, MKMVA submitted over 95% to 98% of its list. So we're dealing with a small percentage to be finalized. APLA as well as confirmed that in fact there were less than 500 of them that are outside the system. So that is an insignificant number. The only challenge of the non-structural forces, those that fought for freedom, was Azanla. And it's a historical fact. Azanla did not integrate because it did not support the process of negotiation. And they were suspicious of the fact
expect that if they integrate, then they are being absorbed by the defense force. Of course, you would understand the historical circumstance of the day, the political circumstance, etc. Now, essentially where we are now, we've been given a clear directive that makes it easier for us now. Zoom into Azamla, confirm in terms of their numbers, because they are not in the PPR league, the state doesn't know whether indeed they are military veterans. And if they are, the general nurse must come to the system. So we're therefore narrowing and zooming into the focus area. And we're very confident. The directive is very clear if you read what the Deputy Minister said in Parliament in his budget vote speech. He says by December they say we should have completed. And we're now confident that with a ring that is smaller now, we're very close to finishing. However, I also want to encourage members of Parliament, also assist us, so that we're able to make sure we build a credible database that is going to ensure that the right military veteran receives the right benefit at the right time at the right place. The other point that one wants to begin to talk to is the issue relating to information on provinces. Indeed, this is work in progress. I think my colleague has alluded to one, but we must confess that the capacity of the we're fixing the car while it's moving. We're dealing with a backlog of 20 years. What we ought to have been doing to make our veterans ought to have started as early as our democracy 20 years ago. Like in all other countries, you go to the Sandinista movement, you go to Mongolians, you go to Mozambicans, all those that fought liberation, you'd realize that one of the critical things that they ought to do is to make sure that they put systems in place and policies and programs in place immediately so that as you roll out programs of government, they also take care of military veterans issues. Only 5 years ago, we established a dedicated department. Now, that on its own creates certain challenges on backlogs, but we're dealing with it as a matter of agency. Suffice to say, the will is there to make sure that we move fast. And to the extent that where we are now in terms of provincial data, we are still developing it. I'll make an example. On the education that support we are providing, we already have discussed that in the past 2 years, the bias had been, unfortunately, in Kaube. We are beginning to say move out into all other regions as a directive from the ministry to say make sure that equitable distribution of access to education. Now in the 400 that we're providing this year in terms of tertiary support and basic education support, you'll get the demographic. So we'll supply you with the fact that we're moving in the direction of equitable access by provinces in a manner that doesn't discriminate or bias towards others. However, you'll know the fact that the concentration of military veterans is a historical fact. They're not the same in all provinces. So we will then be guided by the profile of each province. But your support in the direction of making sure we build profiles is indeed welcome. Improvement of the capacity of the department. It's work in progress. We already are sitting at 135 posts that have been outfilled out of 169. Indeed, also that also is not necessarily adequate, but that's what we are allocated. We're working on redesigning the structure to be responsive to the type of challenges that require personnel to deal with the issue. However, what we're looking at in terms of our capacity building is putting systems in place and other processes in place. As a new department, we're faced with teething problems, we're dealing with them. You will also recall that the issue of the suspension of the DG or putting the DG and DDG on special leave, I do want us to caution the members on the language you use, because putting somebody on special leave and a suspension are two different things. We want to protect the integrity of our colleagues. The minister made it clear, she instructed me personally as head of communication to issue the statement, and we're consistent and want the members to actually assist us in communicating. They've been put on special leave precisely because special leave and dispensation connote different implications. And once we protect the integrity of our colleagues and the integrity of the minister's decision, precisely because we should not judge them guilty before they are guilty. That's one. Secondly, the issue is that the report, the minister made clear that in the statement he issued to the public, they were put on special leave because there was a report on a high-risk assessment that was done in the department. To allow for that, because it has certain things that it was pointing out, to create an enabling environment for the minister to get satisfaction and satisfy herself, she then put that process in motion. And she spoke to the colleagues, and they were then allowed. So the report has been completed. The minister said she's applying her mind as soon as possible, will then help her determination on the issue. We would really, really implore members here
in protecting the integrity of the process and the integrity of our colleagues. Let's not judge before they are judged. Lastly then, the point one wants to put here is the issue relating to budget challenges. Indeed, budget estimates were made when the department was being established. It is very clear that what we have now is far from addressing the backlog I told you we are dealing with of 20 years of people, in fact more than 20 years. Most veterans who studied in the 1960s in the armed struggle are dealing with over 50 years of backlog, not having houses, not having jobs, not having income, not having anything. So the estimates were made, and what we got was what the fiscal could afford. What we are beginning to engage is the fact that let's go back to understand the reality of this community of veterans so that the fiscal can respond to the challenges. And this is not out of the norm in the world. All countries that value their history take care of their military veterans. Thank you very much.
Chair, I just want to put one last one with regard to aerial support, because I don't think that was adequately responded to. And yes, with burial support at the moment, are we reviewing the process where currently we provide burial support to the main members, the military veteran, and we're now in a process where we're considering going into a program where we will be able to fund the burial support of the whole family. It's in its infancy, it's under discussion. It requires us to get approval and deviation from National Treasury, and this is a program that for which it requires policy amendments. So we are busy with that, and we trust that by the end of this financial year we should have something in place, and if we can get it done before that, it would be a bonus, but we are busy with that. With regard to providing the actual burial support, we do have a process, and with the Honourable Chair, I could leave my contact details as well, so that we can have discussion on the process, because it's a matter of the relevant documentation being provided, and we then respond by facilitating that the amount of money is paid to the family of the person who has passed on, and we endeavour to do that as quickly as we can. But currently the process, Chair, it runs over a period of at least 2 weeks from the time we get documentation to the final approval, and that is why we're looking at the policy review so that we can try and do that much quicker to try and get money to families when by the time a person is buried.
We are running out of, running late. The defense, let's give defense first.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm aware that it's already after 1 o'clock, so I'll be very brief. On the issue of new plans for training in the Department of Defense, I would just cover all the issues that are related to training that have been raised by indicating that there has been a program for the new training within the South African National Defense Force, and it has been driven by the Chief of the Army, General Masondo, in his project, what we call a profile of a South African soldier. That profile of a South African soldier project has now been completed, and it is being rolled out in the South African National Defense Force in terms of what kind of a soldier do we need now in South Africa of 2014, facing the kind of threats and the nature and the kind of deployment that we have, but also with a lot of emphasis on the discipline and professional conduct of our soldiers. That is also to be addressed then as part of the retention of skills, and this is also addressed within the Defense Review 2014, which talks to the rejuvenation of the South African National Defense Force with an element, a component of it focusing on the human resource development and rejuvenation of the South African National Defense Force in general. The Cessna accident in Edinburgh, we have a board of inquiry. We are waiting the results. I will ask the chief, the specialist in the Navy, Admiral Naidu, who is there, to talk about the sea rescue squadron in terms of what they are now used for. As far as the appearance of the chief of the South African Defense Force before Parliament, in keeping, I think, with the various legislation, but particularly with the South African National Defense, with the Defense Act, PFMA in particular. PFMA talks about the Center for Defense as being the head of department as well as the accounting officer. Therefore, as the head of department and accounting officer, I have always appeared in front of Parliament for whenever that such a need arises. The chief of the South African National Defense Force is highlighted as an advisor on military operations to the minister. And the minister then will invite the chief of the National Defense Force to appear as needed in terms of the military advice that is being provided to the minister. As you know, the commander-in-chief then of the South African National Defense Force.
Sorry, sir. Can you put your mic close to you? Thank you.
Thank you. And as you know, the chief commander-in-chief of the South African National Defense Force is the president who's always in Parliament. But specifically, I think there are regulations, Defense Act and PFMA, that we all try to comply with. An area has been raised about the fence and the, on the Muzini border. There we would like to highlight that the infrastructure on our borders, both the fence and the road, is the competency of the Department of Public Works. The HR will talk, that is the General Silwane, will talk to the transformation within the South African National Defense Force, including the gender equity as well as the deployment of our defense attache, taking into account the gender equity. And also, I think within Admiral Naidu will cover the calculation of hours in our maritime plans and security. The independence of military ombuds office is guaranteed by the Military Ombuds Act. I think it was members of Parliament who formulated the Military Ombuds Act. There were a lot of debate at that time whether that office should be, that is functionally, not, administratively, not functionally, administratively report or be placed within the Minister of Defense or within the Minister of Justice. I think the wisdom of the lawmakers at that time that it should be within the Department of within the Department of Defense, but it is the independence of the office itself is assured by the Military Ombuds Act as well as the Military Ombuds regulations. On our part, we enter into service level agreement in terms of what they expect from the Department of Defense. We just signed such a service level agreement about 2 weeks ago, in a three-way signed by the Chief SANDF, Secretary for Defense, as well as the Military Ombuds Lieutenant General retired, Matanzi. The plan for clean audit is a priority within the Department of Defense. The previous financial year, that is 12-13, I think we were qualified on intangibles and tangible assets. Now it's too early to say for this current financial year, but we can assure the members of the committee that they will see a lot of improvement in terms of the actions that we have taken as a Department of Defense to address the adverse findings of the Auditor General. The Constant Jones as a military base, it talks to the various, the changing of our strategies, both militarily but also in terms of maritime security strategies. In the white paper of 1998 talked about the closing down of the military, of the naval bases, whether it was in Durban and in other areas. But now the defense review as well as since 2010 with the rise of the piracy on the seashores, we have been looking at the Indian Ocean as the main area for need of improved maritime security. To send our vessels to the Mozambican Channel, having base in Simonstown, it is quite an expensive operation, as opposed to maybe if there was to be a naval base in Durban, but as you have indicated, Paul St. John's, because of limited funds, we are now focusing on limited budget that we have. We are at this point focusing on upgrading the naval station in Durban from a naval station into a naval base. It is true that we have difficulties. There was an issue about the salary packages of the soldiers, the marching of the soldiers to union buildings, the embarrassing levels of salaries, and officials in the Department of Defense undermining the laws. There will be no authority in the Department of Defense that will be undermining the laws of the country, and all the judgments of the courts will be respected at all times. The salary packages have been improved greatly. There was a time when the march was going on, there were in the media reports of salaries of about 3,000 to 4,000 a month. I can assure the members of the committee that there is no soldier who earns less than 10,000 a month today because of the actions that because of the actions that have been taken in and recommendations of the Defense Service Commission. The alignment of our budget to international agreements is quite a difficult one. We have noticed over the last 3 years that while our budgets are being reduced, the requirement from the country in terms of the commitment of the Department of the South African Defence Force is increasing to a point whereby we have been asked now to prepare for the African capacity for rapid response to crisis and the Africa standby force. The deployment in the DRC, the deployment in Sudan, now the maritime security patrols, all of this, and as we speak to the members of the committee now, we will not be able to predict what will be the requirement for 15-16 as we are budgeting for 15-16, but the indications are that the requirements from the national defense by the country on the National Defense Force is increasing, and that makes it difficult to align our budget to the various operations that we're asked to conduct. The retention of skills in the Department of Defense is still a big challenge. We do need, but there are plans within the defense review, again, towards the retention of skills that we require, but also the succession planning. As you would then imagine, if you talk about the integration of the various forces, both the statutory and the non-statutory forces that happened 20 years ago, then you will then agree that now, 20 years later, you have a layer of military command that is sitting there between 50 and 60, whether it is as a colonel or brigadier or major or lieutenant general, who are at that point, almost 5 to 10 years on the exit point. But the question is, who is then coming to replace and to succeed that leadership of the South African National Defense Force? These are the challenges that are facing the South African National Defense Force, and the minister has addressed it during her budget vote and actually instructed HR to come up with an HR plan, which is already out there. It just needs, I think, some final refinement as well as more implementation. The critical skills that we have that exist right now in the Department of Defense is mostly in the areas of Army and Navy, engineers, medical specialists, Air Force pilots and technicians, but also in the legal service. internal audit division, as I indicated, which is being capacitated. Those are the main areas of critical skills, so vacancies and skill shortages that we have in the Department of Defense today. As for the plans for the military vehicles, we have had contracts for the maintenance of the military vehicles. We have not been happy with the service provided by various service providers for the maintenance of our what we call B, that is soft to medium hard shells vehicles. And we are in the chief of the South African National Defense Force is in the process of addressing that to see now that these contracts might be coming to an end, what kind of a contract do we need? But emphasis will be on internalizing the skills, in other words, developing the skills for military vehicles internally. The members of the South African National Defense Force, the soldiers themselves, if you drive the vehicle, must be able to do at least level 1 and 2 maintenance of that vehicle in case it runs into problem. And then we can then leave level 3 and level 4 vehicle maintenance to the specialist equipment maintenance out there in the industry. That applies also to the maintenance of helicopters. We have partnership and service level agreements with DNL for the maintenance of our and repairs of our helicopters, but also for the transfer of skills into the Air Force so that some of this work of maintenance can be done by the Air Force personnel themselves. And the executive flights, the status and safety of our executive flights. Yes, we are aware that the most of the transport aircraft in the South African Air Force are aging, but the safety is intact, and the safety of these aircraft is intact. We are in the process, the Air Force right now is in the process of finalizing its plan in terms of how to replace the aging air fleet and how to build appropriate capability for the executive flights. The minister has come out on record time and again emphasizing that hiring of executive flights, because the capability is limited in the Air Force, is expensive, and we need to acquire the flights for our Air Force as soon as we possibly can. In terms of the plan then to implement the defense review document, at the stage that we're at right now, Honorable Chairperson, is that we have tabled the defense review policy document to Parliament. We are engaging with Parliament to find the areas that we need to address to this defense review. Talk to about 4 milestones. First, to stop the decline of defense force capabilities, and emphasizing on the human resource rejuvenation, improving and enhancing the capability of our defense force, and finally preparing the sustainability of those capabilities. So the plans, the chief of the South African National Defense Force and the Secretary for Defense have established a project implementation team. We are ready. We are waiting now to receive the implementation plan from that team, as well as to receive recommendations from Parliament after the Parliament has had an opportunity to discuss that defense review policy document. Finally, then, on the impact of the National Youth Service. The National Youth Service, as we have indicated, is a program of collaboration between the Department of Defense as well as various departments, particularly Department of Social Development, as well as Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. And what has happened is that the impact that we find is that, first of all, it assists us because it enables us then to utilize our expertise and to utilize the capacity that we have on these spaces, and also to improve the level of training as well as experience that our members of the Defense Force gain in this process of training, but also it then assists the departments that we are collaborating with by providing a pool of expertise or young people with various expertise, first in discipline, but also in various technical skills that has been identified by the department in terms of training. And as I indicated, we take about 1,200 every year of youngsters into this program. And when they go out mostly as community workers. They are not trained specifically as soldiers, but they're trained as community workers to be able to work in this community, in the communities where they are deployed to assist. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think you are covered and covered by the time. Thank you.
Summarize,
because we don't have time. Members have to go from 2 o'clock. It's a marathon. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you, Executive. Members, with regard to the transformation in our department, I think I must inform members that we are very, very working very hard. And I can also assure members that very recently I was at the SADC work group for Defense Forces. There we have got a spending agenda where we present representativity, and we were commended there. And most of the member states in SADC, they are now trying to come and benchmark with us and see how we are doing this. The first group is coming 10 to 11 November. In terms of representativity, now, because of the nature of the military, we are well aware of that, the hardness and those things. But we are currently, as we speak, end of June 2014, women 29%, and the others are male. But I must also make it very, very clear that in terms of progression at the highest level, we are doing very well. We don't have yet a member in the Military Command Council, but as we speak, we have got major generals, which are about 5. And we are doing very, very well in those regards. Compared to other, our colleagues in SADC, they are, everybody wants to come and learn from us what are we doing, what our policies. I can assure members that we are doing very, very well in that regard. But that, with your permission, maybe lastly, the fourth number, reconfiguration, it was mentioned is a ministerial priority. Yes, the HR division and the sectors have referred to it. We are busy with what we call the HR charter, looking at the whole very chain of the HR together with new generation of the IT, that everything can be linked together. Currently, as we speak, our recruitment system is isolated. The maintenance where you do financing, the separation. The fourth member configuration will also form part of that whole very chain rejuvenation of the department's IT system. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question on the 14th Squadron helicopters. So we didn't get an answer on that one.
Honorable Chair, I will respond with regards to the questions on the maritime defense program, specifically the 12,000 sea hours. That figure of 12,000 was determined based on the Joint Force Employment Requirements, which refers to the operations that we must conduct in terms of borderline patrol, in terms of anti-piracy operations, in terms of the surveys that we must conduct along our coast. So based on all of these exercises and operations that we must do, that's how we've come up with a figure of 12,000. It's also based on the average for the last 5 years. Then the second point was with regards to the anti-piracy operations and the training that is conducted in that regard. We have what we call the Maritime Reaction Squadron within the Navy. It is a very specialized unit that that is trained in boarding operations, search and seizure, and so on, and they are primarily responsible. They are deployed with our vessels that are conducting anti-piracy operations, but they are the elements that deploy from the vessels onto the suspected pirate vessels to go and search and make sure that they are not in fact pirates. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll cover it. If, yes, let me thank the Come again, your question.
My cover, Chairperson. I think all the members got their answers. I just need an answer. I just asked for it now, not even 1 minute ago. And I'm being ignored. And other members are complaining. I listened to all of that. Thank you, Chair.
Our member, are you covered?
No, Chairperson, I just asked the question again about the 15th Squadron, the helicopters that are supposed to be patrolling. Are they patrolling or not?
Okay. Doctor, can you... Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With respect to, I understood the question to be the maritime patrol, so I thought it was with respect to what the Admiral answered on the leaks, that they work in conjunction with the Navy. If that is the case, those helicopters are being used, and it has been explained, as the Admiral states. In general, the requirement for force employment is we meet all of those as it is here. So those are with respect to what is exactly required, and it is based on specific mission requirements.
Thank you. Let me take this opportunity to thank the military veterans, SANDA, of South African National Defense Force, to come to us, and we still a long way to go. We're at the beginning, so there are a lot of things that we have to get clarity on. We cannot finish this within a day. 5 years to come. We're of almost a lot of years to come that we can grill. And but what I am appealing to you, let's work together. Let's understand each other. We're coming in the various corners of South Africa with different understanding. But if we can tolerate each other, I think we'll do exactly what our people and our commander in chief, that let's take South Africa forward. Thank you very much for those few. I think let's adjourn.